Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This hour is being brought to you by Busey Bank. Ray, let's go.
Yo, Holmes!
Lawrence Holmes.
Holmes runs it really well.
Noon to 2.
Holmes doing what Holmes does
on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yo, Holmes!
And 670thescore.com. In Odyssey Station. Russell Dorsey, national MLB insider for Bally Sports and Stadium.
President Jed Hoyer always talks about, you know, who's going to be a part of that next great Cubs team. They think Seiya Suzuki is going to be a big part of that.
A guy who is really turned into a stud and could likely be an MVP candidate, Luis Robert, has all the tools, the power, the speed.
Host of The Rally on Bally Sports.
If you could ban something from sports for 10 years, what would it be?
I would say the wave. It's a bit too much.
Co-host of the Sports Adjacent podcast.
I don't let it get to that point where I have 1,000 unread emails.
I have 277 right now.
You have bodies in your house, bro.
Russell Dorsey.
What's up, Russell?
With Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Russ joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. I feel like I'm watching Russ on Twitch right now. Twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. Like, I can also just see him in the Zoom. What's up, bro?
Yo.
I feel like I know where you are in the United Center building right now. And it feels like did they force you out of your spot, man?
So usually I'm in the conference room, but they were actually, like, you know, having a little conference. Instead of me going in there, sneaking in there and closing the doors like I do my head. I'm out here on the, this would be the south side of the building.
Yeah, like you're looking right at Malcolm X College out that window.
Yes, and then the hospital out this way.
All right, okay, cool. I'm glad that you found a space where you could come and do the show today. Before we talk about the White Sox or the Cubs, I want to talk about the big news in baseball. Joe Madden being fired yesterday, were you expecting him to be a in-season firing, or did this catch people off guard?
Lawrence, this team was 27, and this is why I talk about this team, I mean the Angels, 27-17 2 weeks ago, right? Like, it's insane what's happened to the Angels. You lose 13 straight games. 12 straight before they fired Joe Madden. And it's like, you know how it goes, and whether it's football, the NBA, the manager, your head coach, that's going to be the fall guy in a lot of these instances. And, you know, Joe's not going out there and playing all nine positions. Like, you have Mike Trout goes into the worst slump of his career during the stretch. And obviously that's a correlation of why the Angels, when you don't have the best player in the world playing like the best player in the world, you're going to lose games. But also, if they're 0-7 in June, they have a minus 25 run differential, a 484 OPS as a team, and a 558 team ERA in June. Like, they're not doing a lot of things right. And so Joe ended up being the fall guy for that. And I think if you look at Joe's track record of where he's been, sometimes things run its course with Joe. I think at the same time, this is a roster that has underachieved. And it was before Joe Madden got there. But they brought Joe in to think that he could take that team to the next level with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and Anthony Rendon, and they just hadn't done that. So, you know, they felt they needed to shake things up, and I don't think after – when you lose 10 in a row, that's when it really gets people's attention. Then you just have to see what a franchise wants to do. Like, do you say, all right, we're going to cut our losses right now and try to salvage the rest of our season? And that's what the Angels did.
I was a little surprised just because I know how close Joe is with Artie Moreno, and that this reunion of him being back with the Angels – it was a huge deal to him. I talked with him at spring training a couple years ago. He toured me around the facility out there, and he was so, I hadn't seen him that happy in a while. And so seeing it in like this, I'm sure it's harsh for everyone. And Joe was saying, don't feel bad for me. I'll be fine. Do you think that he'll manage again?
Absolutely. 100%. Like, there's a lot of, I'm not going to, there are a lot of managers that probably are on their last legs around the big leagues. I think you look at a couple of different markets, there are managers who are definitely on the hot seat. If the White Sox disappoint and either miss the playoffs or are first round out again, I would imagine that they at least start thinking about a move. But I don't think – it's hard for me to imagine after the way they brought Tony La Russa in that they would just fire him. Like, in my mind, I don't even think – I think it's a Tony – it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, retire type thing. But at the same time, yeah, I think you at least, well, I won't say for, I'll speak for other organizations. You would at least think about it in the situation that the White Sox are in. I just don't know with the dynamic that they have over there that they would do that. But yeah, I think Joe manages again, and you know, there are going to be a lot of openings, whether it's right now or at the end of the season, of teams looking for new managers.
He's a bit of an acquired taste, and he would tell you that is the case. When he walked a batter with the bases loaded, it caught a lot of people's attention. And because he's unorthodox, do you think that along with the losing streak, is like, you know what, we might need to go with someone that's a little bit safer to try and fix all of this? And Phil Nevin is definitely that.
I mean, I would imagine that's part of it. Like, I think the whole, we needed a new voice. When an organization says that, I think that speaks to that in a lot of different ways. It sounded like it was cordial between both sides. At the same time, that doesn't mean that they didn't think, you know, maybe guys weren't listening anymore. Like, you disappoint, you guys have got, and look, they had missed the postseason every year since 2012. They hadn't, you know, since Joe came in 2020, they hadn't gone to the postseason, and you look at context there, you only had Mike Trout for 36 games last year. Like, I don't have the best player in the world on my team when that was a big draw of me coming there. That's going to be an issue. At the same time, look, maybe there was a philosophy difference, right, where maybe Joe thought one thing and the Angels front office thought another. And so I just think at the end of the day, you couldn't just let it continue to go on, right? Like, if, let's say they lose 20 games in a row with the same with Joe as your manager, because now you have guys not, you know, it's like, oh, well, we're going to lose again tonight. And you start guys thinking about Cancun and all this other stuff in the middle of the season. Like, June just started. There's 4 months left in the season. You want to try to salvage the rest of it, especially with, you know, a postseason landscape now where there's an extra wild card team and you still have an opportunity to make the postseason.
Do you think it matters that Mike Trout doesn't really have postseason experience? Like, we can still talk about him as the greatest player ever without that, or does he need more postseason validation?
Absolutely not. Like, I think he is one of the greatest players to ever walk this earth already, and he just turned 30 years old. Like, I think you could, if he never played another game, there, I think he would be able to get into the Hall of Fame, right, within a 10-year span. He's that good. And I think in a sport like baseball, where it is the most, you know, outside of golf or tennis, where you're out there by yourself, it's in the most individualized sport, in most individualized team sport, where, yes, this is, there's nine of us out here, but I do my job. I can do my job well. Like, look at Mike Trout. He is one of the best players to ever play this game, and he's been to the postseason one time. Like, it's not like you have nine Mike Trouts out there. So we had an argument on the Sports Adjacent podcast that will come out tomorrow where Tony just said, you know what, Mike Trout, it's your fault that Joe got fired. And I'm like, Tony, you're an idiot, and I'm not talking to you anymore, and I'm muting your mic. But, yeah, like, in an individualized sport like baseball, you can have somebody be the best player we've ever seen, and you just don't have that level of success. You don't have – you know, that postseason experience. And look, they've gone through a lot of managers since Mike Trout, you know, got there. Like, they've been through a lot of GMs since Mike Trout got there. You can only do so much as a player, and he's done that. So it's unfortunate for us as baseball fans, where it's like, man, this is the best player I've ever seen, and I've gotten to see him in the postseason one time.
Well, Tony has a lot of love for Joe Maddon, like a lot.
He does.
So know that that's a, like the place that he's come from. That was probably Tony's singular, like that was the launching pad for Tony as a producer. The stuff that we were doing with Joe Maddon. So
I get it. I get the cookie thing and all that. And
Joe set him straight on the cookie thing. Like what had happened was, Russ, is that what Tony thought because Joe is a little bit of an other world thinker. He thought that he had a kindred spirit in him, and that Joe was going to be with him on his ridiculous oatmeal raisin cookie thing. And Joe blasted him, Russ. Like it wasn't just like, no, I prefer chocolate chip. He was like, I don't understand how anyone could prefer oatmeal raisin over chocolate chip. And, I mean, he gave it to him. He gave him the business for 90 seconds on the topic.
I get it. And most people should give it to Tony like that when he says these ridiculous things, because he blamed Mike Trout for Joe Maddon getting fired when Mike Trout has been the best player of this generation. And like me and Jason have this thing where we make fun of Tony because anybody who has ever been nice to him, now that person can do no wrong.
That's right. That person gets elevated up. But I appreciate Tony's loyalty, because that's the one thing that you know about him is that he's a loyal man and he cares deeply about things. How fun is this Chris Morrell story?
Man, for a team that otherwise is likely going to be selling, for a fan base that saw Baez, Brian Arizzo get traded, for a team that didn't see their team really spin big this offseason outside of, you know, Marcus Stroman and grabbing Seiya Suzuki in the international free agent market, it's huge. And it's taken a lot of the attention off of where they are in their competitive window right now. We're going to have to start talking about that in the next couple of weeks, because there are going to be some teams that are interested in the last face, you know, one of the last faces of their franchise in Wilson Contreras. And I don't know if they bring that, like, even if they didn't trade Wilson, like, I don't know if they extend Wilson or bring him back if he goes to free agency. And look, it's not just the Cubs and Wilson. Like, I wrote a column about Aaron Judge yesterday. Aaron Judge is having maybe the greatest walk year we've ever seen in baseball. The guy might hit 65 home runs in a walk year. He's going to be able to have a blank check. But if you look at Wilson, and that even that guy said, look, I'm going to go free agency. I'm going to talk to 30 teams. The Yankees will be one of them. Wilson could have the same attitude. It's like, look, I'm going to go to free agency. I'm going to talk to 30 teams. The Cubs will be one of them. But at the same time, if you don't think you're going to be competing anytime soon, you got to think about it, right? Like, I know everybody, it's always, the Cubs have money. I would agree with that sentiment. Like, the Rickets definitely have the money to pay top-tier free agents a lot of money to come play for the Chicago Cubs. But until I see that, you know, they've been a little gun-shy with it after the Yu Darvish contract, right? And so for me, Seiya Suzuki is a start. Wilson Contreras is a start, but it has to be more than those guys. And I don't know, I guess where they are in terms of their rebuild is the mystery, right? Like, are they in the middle because they'll spin big in an offseason? Maybe. I thought I was maybe on that train before the season started, but maybe they're closer to the beginning of a rebuild, right? Where you're trying to see what these kids are to know, okay, this guy could play here, this guy could play here, and then we spend big on player X in free agency. And now you're in let's get to 80 wins range, and then let's get to try to go from 80 to 90. I think that's the big question of where are they actually in their rebuild? Because we know they're in a rebuild, but where are they in that trajectory would be my next question.
I ask you this every week when we talk about the White Sox, Russ.
Yeah.
Are we finally starting to see things turn towards the positive for them?
I think you have Jose Abreu starting to realize, oh, man, okay, I can still hit the ball. It still feels like they're missing something. Like what Michael Kopech continues to do each week is so impressive to me, and it's a big deal. Like, I don't want that to get lost or bogged down because they don't play the best brand of baseball. Like, him being a stud starting pitcher is a really big deal, because for a while there, you didn't know, okay, is he going to be stuck in the bullpen? Is he going to be a closer? No, he is a bona fide number one right now, especially when Lucas Giolito, it doesn't look like himself. So it's really it's important that he's pitching the way he is currently, with Lance Lynn still on the shelf and Giolito figuring things out. I do think they don't look as bad as they did maybe when we talked about it 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, but they don't play a crisp brand of baseball. And for a team that has a margin for error as small as they do, I have a struggle saying, okay, they've turned the corner, because they can beat a team like the Dodgers today and get swept by the Cincinnati Reds tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I want to see it more consistently from them. Like, it's been a lot of two steps forward, three steps back. Until you can get three steps forward, one step back, and be more consistent and start getting guys healthy, yeah, as you do your little dance there.
I'm doing that. The Paula Abdul, because now, thanks a lot, Russ. That's going to be in my head all day. DJ Scat Cat and Paula Abdul tap dancing up the stairs.
Right. You need that. So, like, I need to see more consistency from the White Sox. And I don't think that's a unfair ask from a fan base. It's like, I just want to see the White Sox, you know, have a consistent 2 weeks, not win a series and then get swept two straight series. Like, they need to be more consistent, because the teams that they're chasing are more consistent than they are and play better baseball.
Russ, I think you're on it. Yeah, I think you're 100% on it. And if you want more coverage like that, you should watch Russ on Stadium and Bally Sports. He's with a great crew over there. They have a ton of fun. My guy Cam Smith, like, all my peoples is over there. Like, I get jealous, man. I see all y'all hanging out.
You got fans in the building now.
I'm like, Yahoo Noise is over there. The Faith, the Noise. My guy Brad.
Hey, man, you got fans in the building now. I ain't saying. I'm just saying.
I love seeing you guys succeed, and that's a good place with a lot of really good people. So seeing you be there, that makes me really, really happy. Russ, as always, thank you for joining me. The next episode of Sports Adjacent will drop tonight, correct?
Correct. Either late tonight or early morning on Thursday. Yes.
All right. I am looking forward to seeing what you guys come up with this week after the bathroom conversation that happened last week.
Ah, jeez, yeah. That I don't know what it is about restrooms and Sports Adjacent podcast, but we find ourselves in some precarious positions.
What we found out over the last couple of weeks, though, Russ, is that Tony should not be allowed to go places. Like, that's it.
Yes. We were talking about it yesterday. It's like, I don't know how Tony's parents have lived with him as long as they have. And should we be mad at Tony's parents for letting him out in public?
That's why we're all so amazed that he's marrying this bright, beautiful woman that puts up with his nonsense.
Right. And me and Jason always say she's a little off too, even though we love Stephanie, his lovely fiance. She's a little off too for saying, yes, I will marry the guy you know is Tony.
Yes. Yes, I will marry this. That's the perfect way to put it.
This.
Russ, have a great rest of your day, man. I'll talk to you.
Hi, Lewis. I appreciate it.
That is Russ Dorsey of Stadium and Bally Sports. He's terrific. The Sports Adjacent podcast is phenomenal as well. We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll get very White Sox-centric. Why? Because the general manager of the White Sox spoke on a lot of issues that you've been bringing to me, whether it's on the Twitch stream or via text or you're hitting me up on Twitter. You'll hear what Rick Hahn has to say about where this team is at. Next on The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We have a couple of very nice pitching matchups for you. We'll start tonight with Michael Kopech on the hill, 26-year-old, taking on Mitch White, the 27-year-old. That's strike three. Michael Kopech fills up the bottom of the zone. He tried to earlier and got it there. 1-2 for Justin Turner. And that's strike three. Kopech lights up the zone with a fastball.
In the booth for the Cubs.
Oh, wow. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Snapped off a slider. Man, that fastball has been really tough to find tonight. Strikeout number six. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Two strikes. Check swing. He did. Strike three. Eight strikeouts for Kopech.
Highlights courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. Jason Benetti on the call. Michael Kopech has been a dominant force in the White Sox rotation. ERA at 1.94. His strikeout total, fantastic. He's closing in on the innings that he threw last year for the White Sox. And he seems like he's in command. A 0.941 whip for Michael Kopech so far this year. He was really terrific. I actually thought that last night, him and Mitch White made for, at least for the first few innings of it, really good watching. You're watching two guys command the strike zone really well. The White Sox as a team still struggle with the bases loaded. They are hitting in the, what, ones, the low ones with the bases loaded this season, with a lot of opportunities, including two last night. Michael Kopech opponents are hitting in the low 100s against him all season long. It's crazy. But that doesn't mean that the White Sox don't have problems. They're still a game under 500. Maybe we're seeing things turn around. That would be great if that were the case. Take a look at the disaster that was Toronto. And then they go down to Tampa, take two out of three, and they start the series with the Dodgers off well with a win. Before the game, White Sox general manager Rick Hahn spoke. And all of those things that you've been wondering about, he gave voice to them, including being the Grim Reaper, which seems to be the case. So, like, let me just give you an idea of what goes on. Rick is really good about talking when the team comes off of a road trip. It's kind of perfunctory now that he sits in front of the amassed media and discusses White Sox baseball. I think it's very helpful. I think it's an important part of any GM's job to do that, to allow for the fan base to kind of understand. But obviously, over the last few times that he's done it, it's been Rick talking about injuries. Like, that's been the thing. He's like the Grim Reaper. And while there's a lot of actual baseball content in here, he does start off with his Grim Reaper act talking about the injured guys.
Aloy's going to play left field tonight for Charlotte Knights as he continues his rehab assignment, so that nobody gets too alarmed. The plan is for him not to play a full game tonight, so when you check the box scores and see him removed, that's part of the progression. He's progressing well physically. It's really, frankly, a matter of getting his legs completely under him and getting his timing at the plate and rhythm back. So I don't have an exact time to project his return, but it's getting closer, knock on wood. Lance Lynn will be starting for Charlotte again this week, I believe on Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. He's going to go hopefully five innings and somewhere over 70 to 80 pitches that night. If that goes smoothly, we'll then have a conversation about next steps for him, which could well include being activated in Chicago. Where else should I go? Tim Anderson. Tim had a good weekend in Tampa. in terms of his healing and progression towards rehabilitation. Don't have a timeline just yet on a potential rehab assignment for Tim. Hopefully things continue on this path, hopefully sometime when we're on the next road trip. But hopefully at some point over the next road trip, we're able to get Tim on a rehabilitation assignment and then go from there for his return. I believe the original projection on him was approximately 3 weeks, and we remain on that path. Joe Kelly and Vince Velasquez, both of them hopefully are off a mound at some point during this homestand and then progressing towards a rehab assignment, again, sometime when we're on the next road trip. Vince's was relatively minor, so he's probably a tick ahead of Joe, but they're both, by ideally sometime this month, will both be activated by the end of the month.
With Aloy, we saw him come out of that game, the first one he played, I think, with a little bit on the swing. Tony kind of made it sound like that didn't really have an effect on the timeline or the plan for him when it happened.
Well,
is there more specifics on what that did?
First and foremost, he felt a little discomfort in the leg or behind the knee. Now, he actually was fortunate that he had Lance Lynn, who went through a similar procedure, sitting right there with him to explain to him that, that's going to happen from time to time, that there was nothing to be alarmed about, wasn't any sort of physical setback. It was just really part of the process of building back to playing regularly. We obviously didn't play him the next couple of days, so he did lose out a little bit on those ABs, so maybe it slowed this process down a little bit, but not materially.
How do you, though, in light of all those injuries you just went through, assess where your team is at now in June?
Yeah, it's published in the paper every day where our team's at, so I get a pretty objective measure, but I feel like we've endured, which hopefully will be our toughest part of the schedule, certainly from a opponent standpoint, but more importantly from a manpower standpoint, where we have been from a who's been available. We expect that to improve here over the coming weeks. Certainly segments of the past 2 months that we can be proud of, going I think 11-8 or something like that against the Yankees, Red Sox, and Tampa is pretty good, and something that certainly answers some of the concerns about our ability to match up against good teams. Obviously there's been some stretches there that have been pretty disappointing, and some ruts that on the positive side we've been able to pull ourselves out of, but on the negative you don't want to ever have to endure. I think right now in that clubhouse and that coach's room there's a lot of optimism and excitement to get some of these guys back and to hopefully, like I said, build on some of the momentum from this past weekend.
You guys aren't ones to, and I'm not saying that we should talk about manager changes here, but talking about what happened filling LA, you guys don't really do that. Is that kind of an organizational philosophy?
We don't really do what?
Fire someone during the season. You know what I mean? Is that kind of an organizational philosophy?
No. I'm trying to come up with a counterpoint to show my no is appropriate, and I can't come up with one immediately in my couple of decades that I've been here.
Gene Lamont.
I think I was in high school, but I'm not sure I can take responsibility for Gene Lamont, but sure. Yeah, Gene Lamont, we bounced him. I did not write a letter saying that you should fire Gene Lamont. I got some nasty letters this past week, though, speaking of. The short answer is no. There is not some sort of organizational edict of that. We do not let people go midstream. We do have, and this certainly predates me, like Gene Lamont, you want people to have the information about how they need to get better before you make a change. You don't want anyone to be surprised by making a change. And that applies not just in the dugout or coaching staff. That's the scouts. That's the player development. That's the people in the front office. So we are conscientious about making sure people have the information before a change is made, so to give them a chance to improve. But there certainly is no organizational edict against change or something like that.
How can you kind of evaluate the job Tony has done in the first couple of months?
I mean, look, there's been challenges for across the board here for everyone. We've responded to some pretty well, and we've muddled our way through some others. That's not just on Tony. That's the front office. That's me. That's the coaches and the players themselves. I think we're in this as an organization, and none of us as an organization are satisfied with where we're at right now. But I think to a man and to a woman, we feel good about what the next several months hold for us potentially.
You talked about getting guys back healthy. Mm-hmm. How important is it to get Grandel back to being
I think it's important. I think that last year, obviously, he got off to a similarly slow start and then wound up being one of the, if not the most valuable catcher in the American League, certainly close to it. And that helped us significantly over the course of last season. As I've said to you a couple times already this season, remain confident in his ability to return close to that form. And I think that's going to be a nice shot in the arm for us when that happens.
Man, that would be terrific if it were to come to pass. that Yasmani Grandal was like that. The weird thing about Grandal is that his value is wrapped up in him getting on base. And I know that fans of Yasmani Grandal would say his value is also wrapped up in pitch framing, which is valuable. But I feel like his pitch framing is negated by some of the other stuff catching-wise that he doesn't do well. Pass balls, balls that he flat out misses, the other things defensively that you want a catcher to do. If he could just start walking again and become a threat to get on base, it would go a long way for the White Sox. The other stuff that I thought was interesting that Rick had to say, they clearly believe that they have weathered the storm from a schedule standpoint. And there's some reason to believe them when you look at the way that especially the month of June sets up for them and them getting to this series with the Dodgers in what's a really tough stretch, Toronto, Tampa, and then LA. I hope that they're as good as he thinks they're going to be against the rest of their schedule. And you have to look at it from the perspective of, are the White Sox themselves in a better spot? Instead, like, that's where I'm always checking on the Twins, but from a day-in, day-out basis, are the White Sox playing the best version of baseball that they can? And I would say that they have not. And maybe all of that changes when you get Lance Lynn back and you get TA back. Maybe all of that changes. You get Eloy back. But now, I also think that you have to, if you're projecting the White Sox, and you're projecting them as a team that you think can win a division or win a World Series, I don't think that you can ignore the injuries. I'm not trying to say that anyone's injury prone or anything like that. It's just that whenever the White Sox have felt like they were starting to go forward, they run into injuries that kind of derail them. So does that change the way that you, no one could say, oh, well, this guy's going to miss 25 games. But I think it'd be silly to go, if you are banking on your team being healthy the entire way, I find that to be a little naive, too, because the history is prologue in this case with this particular team. I'm not even assessing blame or fault. I'm just saying if you look at the history of the White Sox over the last three seasons, you see a team that struggles to stay healthy enough. And if they could stay healthy enough, then no one would be nervous. Everyone would be like, oh, yeah, like everything's going to be fine. And it might be. It. When you see someone like Kopech take this step where he's at in his development, the White Sox deserve credit, and I think Tony La Russa deserves some credit. I think that La Russa's handling of Kopech last year was the best thing that he did as a manager. Now, that might be organizational. Like that, maybe I'm giving the credit to Tony, and that's really Tony and Rick and everyone else, and Ethan Katz and everyone else. But when it came to the deployment of him last year and the handling of a situation that could have gone sideways, you have a guy that's a huge prospect that everyone knew was destined to be a starter. For him to accept the role that the White Sox gave him and then for the White Sox to figure out how to make it all work, they get credit for that. I think they should get some credit, very small amount of credit, for cutting bait on Dallas Keuchel. I think that he's bad on the mound, and I'm not sure that he was too great inside the clubhouse either. And you get to take some other chances. I hope that Rick's right. I hope that even though their schedule now is filled with teams that are going to be at or below 500, that they can take advantage of it. It's still on them to take advantage of all of these things. Someone on Twitch said, never give TLR credit. No, I'm going to give him credit when I think he's done something right. I think that he's done a great job of ingratiating himself to TA and to Abreu. And I think that he handled Kopech really well last year. If we're talking about game in, game out strategy, if you look at some of the moves that were made this weekend against Tampa, he deserves some credit. Even last night, pushed the right buttons on pinch hit opportunities. And the White Sox were able to take advantage of Dave Roberts thinking that he should not pitch to Yoan Moncada. I wonder what that does for Moncada's confidence. I mean that in a positive way. Like, oh, they're not going to pitch to me. Yeah, sure, I'm hitting 155. But they're not going to pitch to me? That's right. Better not pitch to me. Damn Skippy. Come back. I want to talk about Joe Maddon. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Score. The Score.
And 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station. Station.
A couple years ago when the Cubs and Joe Maddon parted ways, I was a little sad, but I understood why both parties would want to go and do something different. And I got a chance to talk with Joe out in California, in Arizona, not in California, in Arizona, as he was getting ready to start managing the Angels, and he couldn't have been happier to be back with that franchise because that franchise meant a lot to him. So I was a little bit surprised. I wasn't totally stunned, but a little bit surprised that they fired him yesterday. It's weird how it's been framed, like on MLB Network, relieved of his duties. Like, he's fired. And that stinks for Joe. And I think it stinks a little bit for baseball. I think he's one of the more interesting people around baseball. And you kind of do fall into the categories of you're either 100% in, like I am, like Tony Gill is, on Joe Maddon, or you're 100% out. And that doesn't mean that you can't question walking a hitter with the bases loaded and that hitter's name is not Barry Bonds. But a team going through a 12-game losing streak, you wonder what are the factors that went into that. And it seems like the Angels couldn't take off the table that the manager was a factor in why they were losing games. It's not Joe's fault, but he might be one of the reasons. And now we'll see what they do. They lost their first game under fighting Phil Nevin. Joe Maddon says that he wants to continue to manage. If that's how he truly feels, I hope that he gets another chance to. But whenever he retires, someone should just put a microphone in front of him, because he's a ready-built star in the media industry. All you have to do is put a mic in front of him and say go. Speaking of which, I'll talk with Parkinson Spiegel about that and more next on The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Score. The Score.
And 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Station. Station.
A couple years ago when the Cubs and Joe Maddon parted ways, I was a little sad, but I understood why both parties would want to go and do something different. And I got a chance to talk with Joe out in California, in Arizona, not in California, in Arizona, as he was getting ready to start managing the Angels, and he couldn't have been happier to be back with that franchise because that franchise meant a lot to him. So I was a little bit surprised. I wasn't totally stunned, but a little bit surprised that they fired him yesterday. It's weird how it's been framed, like on MLB Network, relieved of his duties. Like, he's fired. And that stinks for Joe. And I think it stinks a little bit for baseball. I think he's one of the more interesting people around baseball. And you kind of do fall into the categories of you're either 100% in, like I am, like Tony Gill is, on Joe Madden, or you're 100% out. And that doesn't mean that you can't question walking a hitter with the bases loaded and that hitter's name is not Barry Bonds. But a team going through a 12-game losing streak, you wonder what are the factors that went into that. And it seems like the Angels couldn't take off the table that the manager was a factor in why they were losing games. It's not Joe's fault, but he might be one of the reasons. And now we'll see what they do. They lost their first game under fighting Phil Nevin. Joe Madden says that he wants to continue to manage. If that's how he truly feels, I hope that he gets another chance to. But whenever he retires, someone should just put a microphone in front of him, because he's a ready-built star in the media industry. All you have to do is put a mic in front of him and say go. Speaking of which, I'll talk with Parkinson Spiegel about that and more next on The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.